is people getting ready for or participating in a bar mitzvah. When a Jewish boy or girl, generally speaking in the Orthodox world, boys, but in the conservative reform movement in Judaism, also girls, when they reach the age of 13, will have a ceremony called bar mitzvah. It will happen, or can happen, any 3 days, three different days during the course of the week. That'll be on this, on Saturday, on the Sabbath, on the Jewish Sabbath, on Mondays and on Thursdays. Why on those days? Because in ancient times, in the time of Ezra and Nehemiah, we know our biblical text. Basically, when Ezra and Nehemiah, when the Jewish people come back from being in exile, they will come into Jerusalem and they start to read the law publicly. And they realize that people are not understanding what's going on. And so they start to do it on market days. What were market days? Mondays and Thursdays. And then, of course, on the Sabbath as well. From that tradition that dates back about 2,500 years ago, right, around the 5th century BCE, we now have people reading the what we call the Torah, the five books of Moses, on those days. Those are the days that one can have a bar mitzvah. In Israel, unlike the States, in the States, most people, myself included, when you get bar mitzvah, most of the time it happens on a Saturday morning. But on Saturdays, there are restrictions according to Jewish law. That is to say, you can't have writing, you can't have music, no one can drive. And so therefore, in Israel, many times, people will choose to have the bar mitzvah on a Monday or Thursday, where you can both read the Torah, the five books of Moses, and also you can have people drive, you can have music, you can have all the different things that you would normally have, let's say add to the festivities. What's happening here is you're hearing the drums and people being welcomed, and they're going to be walking over to the Western Wall, where they'll probably have their bar mitzvah ceremony. Having said that, to make it a little bit more complex, okay, at the Western Wall is more or less under the auspices, under the control of the Ministry of Religious Affairs, which is Orthodox. If I'm using terms you don't understand, please feel free to stop me, and I'll elaborate. There are Jews who work, most Jews in America, for example, come from what we might call conservative or reform backgrounds. What you will see in a little while, three different groups that I noticed this morning already, having bar mitzvahs here in the area we're going to be touring. Why are they doing it here? Because here you can have men and women praying together, whereas at the Western Wall, under the auspices of the Orthodox establishment, men and women must be separate. Okay? So you'll have different people having different ceremonies on Mondays, Thursdays in this area as well. That was a long answer.
Thank you. Yeah.
Okay, I can also give short answers, so don't be intimidated to ask questions. Yes. Please.
Do they hold them in groups or just individuals, family?
The bar mitzvahs? No, first of all, it would be a minimum of 10 people, because in a Jewish prayer, you need a quorum of 10, what we call a minyan. So 10 minimum, 10 men minimum over there. Over here, in an egalitarian minyan, you could have 10 people, men and women, over the age of 13, though. Because the age of 13 is the initiation ceremony. Once you're 13, you are then counted as someone who can participate in a prayer service as one of the 10.
Does the bar mitzvah have its root in purely in tradition, or is it in the Torah?
No, it is tradition.
Purely
it
tradition.
It's a rite of passage, if you will. I guess you have communion and things of that nature as well.
That would be rooted in scripture. The bar mitzvah is not.
Right. Okay. And this is also designed to destroy my voice. Most importantly. Okay. Now, what we're going to be doing. Any other questions before?
Is that that horn? It looks like a.
That is a shofar, I think. The ram's horn.
Ram's horn. Thank you.
It's going to kill me. All right. What we're looking at right here, as I said before, you don't have to get up, no, you said we're not moving yet. If you were to come into the country and I had to choose one place to bring you, it would be where we are right now, okay? There's no better way of understanding the idea of pilgrimage or the centrality of Jerusalem than where we are right now. Now let's get a sense of that. If you look behind me at the corner you're looking at, 2,000 years ago, looks more or less like this. I'll step back a little bit. There's an artist version, of course, but it is a very accurate version, more or less, from what we can tell archaeologically. The top of the trees, or the minaret, will give you the approximate height that the wall stood to before it was destroyed by Rome. And now if you look down from those trees, you can see three large windows. Yes?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then if you go below that, about 15 feet lower, you see the beginning of an arch coming out of the wall.
Mm-hmm.
That is the beginning of this arch right here, called Robinson's Arch. Okay, that is the entranceway into the Royal Basilica here. What's the Royal Basilica, or the Royal Stoa sometimes referred to? It is the area where the black-domed El-Aqsa Mosque stands today, and that is where you had your money changers. You're all familiar with the story of Jesus turning over the tables of the money changers. The thing we have to ask ourselves, why money changers? Number one, the answer is that if you're making pilgrimage from outside the country, you're going to be carrying currency, coins, let's say, with images of a god or an emperor, which is the same as a god. It would have been inconceivable to purchase a sacrifice with a graven image with a coin like this. Therefore, you changed it for local currency, called back then shekels, and with those shekels, you purchased your sacrifice. Also, the safest place to keep one's money in ancient times was the local temple, right? Temples served as banks. That is why when you conquered someone in ancient times, you robbed their temple, right? Not for any overt religious reason, right? I could have 10 gods, you could have 20 gods. If I defeated you in battle, you could still worship those gods. That's how ancients thought. They were weaker gods, right? It would be a stupid thing to do. But you had the option. I would still rob your temple. Don't take it personally, but the money's mine as victor. Right? That's how things work in those days. Also, the final purpose of the area, three times a year, Jews made pilgrimage into this area, what we call the Shalosh Regalim, the three pilgrimage holidays, Passover, Pentecost, and Tabernacles. And in other temples, you had different pilgrimage holidays. It was an ideal place to trade. So you had, in actuality, a national commodities exchange up there as well. Seemingly secular activities. But again, keep in mind, the ancients did not divorce their religious and secular sides. It was part of one organic whole. Okay, we have in modern times, in many modern societies today, there's this artificial division. But in antiquity, it was very organic, and it held together perfectly that way. Now, what we are going to do is we are going to make our way, first of all, onto the western side, where there will be a couple of bar mitzvahs. Okay, we're going to more or less focus on the area over here. We'll talk a little bit about how the area and how the Temple Mount was built, also how it was destroyed. And then from there, we'll proceed to the southern steps, sometimes referred to as the teaching steps of Jesus. And that's where we'll focus on the idea of pilgrimage. And we will finish inside an air-conditioned area where there's a short film and some other things inside, some exhibits, etc., where we can look at some things. And it actually is a short film which is computer-generated, which will allow us to summarize the visit as well and kind of get a different version of it. I prefer doing it at the end because I don't want that film to influence how you're seeing things here. I'd rather you have your own vision of it, and then you can see the, let's say, computer-generated vision. It's not necessarily more accurate than what you have in your own mind, okay? The dimensions might be more accurate, but the actual feel, not necessarily.